Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell, the boxing news podcast. Matt Christie is away at the moment, probably sunning himself in rainy Brighton. So you're stuck with me, John Dennan, as your host, but I'm joined by Nick Bond, Boxing News art editor, veteran of the magazine, the oldest surviving staff member. Any other accolades?
No, thanks for having me again, John. Nice to be here. What are we going to talk about today?
I suppose the big news this week was the retirement of Karl Froch. Well, on Tuesday morning, so the magazine actually goes to press on a Tuesday, so we were all pretty much sorted what we were doing. And though it wasn't unexpected that Karl Froch was going to retire, I was actually caught off guard that he actually announced it was officially over this week.
Yeah, I think we all were. We were all kind of waiting for it, but you're never kind of ready for when they spring it on you. I think the press release came out about 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
6 a.m. Tuesday morning. We'd already done our front cover for that issue, so when we all got in the office, it was all go again. We had to rip it out and do it again.
Yeah, because I mean, he was such a great fighter, one of the great British fighters, I'd say. He sort of, you know, we needed to do a big tribute to him in the week that he announced his retirement.
I mean, we'd had that exclusive reader Q&A with him a few weeks ago, haven't we? And he'd hinted at it, and he'd done everything but confirm it. So it was good to get that in at that time, to get that Q&A in, and then he's confirmed it now, but definitely one of the best British boxers, you know, carrying our 25 of 25 theme. He's certainly one of the best British of the last 25 years, if not, you know, of all time.
Yeah. I mean, what would you say was it that makes him such a great fighter, or made him such a great fighter? Is it so much his sort of skill level in the ring, or just the way his career and everything he did in his career?
As a boxer, he had a very unique style. He looked a bit sort of herky-jerky at times, didn't he? A bit sort of, didn't look fluid, perhaps is the right word to say. And I remember as an amateur, he was quite proud of the fact that his style was unique, and not a lot of the Russians or Cubans had seen his style. And he was successful at the international stage. But also, I think his strongest qualities are his strength, his physical strength, his chin. He's got a cast iron chin, and he's got a really solid punch on him, or had. So if you've got those attributes as a boxer, you're going to go far.
Right. So do you see him quite a lot as an amateur?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was an ABA champion, and I didn't see a lot of him in the flesh as an amateur, but he got his world medal, didn't he?
Yeah.
He got a world bronze, and he went to the Commonwealth Games, and he was an international boxer for a few years.
Yeah.
He beat some good guys.
So because when he turned pro, how much sort of buzz about him would you say there was? Like, presumably he was expected to be a British champion, but was he expected to be a long time world champion?
He turned pro with a handful of other top amateurs at the time. Matthew Thirlwall, Lenny Dawes, people like that, with Mick Hennessy's class of 2001 or 2002, I forget what he called it, and David Walker as well. So he didn't turn pro to fanfare surrounding just him, it was a group of them. But right from the get-go, you could see that Froch was made to be a professional boxer. You know, some of the guys like Matthew Thirlwall, who I mentioned, who was a explosive amateur, knocks everyone out, stops everyone. You expected him to translate into the pro game and do the same, but it just didn't click for him, but Froch it did. But his strength, his will to win, his conditioning, he kind of had everything you'd want, bar that sort of fluid, smooth boxing. But in his own way, he was a very good boxer, but just not kind of smooth, but...
Yeah, do you think in terms of his skills, he's actually being underrated? I know we've seen him struggle with, like, or have a hard time with Andre Durrell. Obviously, he's outboxed by Andre Ward.
Yeah, I think that was probably the best of Durrell, who did give him a hard time, and I don't think there's any disgrace in that. Andre Ward is clearly one of the best boxers of recent years. Yeah, he probably is a little bit underrated, but I think his boxing skills have been overshadowed by his punch, his strength, his iron will, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So he turned pro Mick Hennessy, who sort of took him through his breakthrough fights, you know, the big fight with Pascal on ITV, and then he went on this really hard path through the Super Six.
Yeah, I think coming up to Pascal, he was already, you know, up with the top boxers, but Pascal was the best he boxed at the time. But he'd done things the hard way, you know, he boxed on BBC, I think, with the Hennessy's lot. But the Super Six was just phenomenal, wasn't it? The run of fights he had, you know, top-class boxer after top-class boxer, and it's got him the recognition that he now has.
Yeah.
Arthur Abraham, Kessler, Jermaine Taylor, one fight after the other. You know, Glenn Johnson, you know, who's the old war horse. You know, he fought them all.
Yeah, and they were all pretty exciting fights. I mean, the Jermaine Taylor especially.
Yeah, I mean, you know, nobody's knockout proof, and he was flawed. You know, Jermaine Taylor flawed him as well as Groves, famously. But he always got up, and he always battled on and stopped both those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, because he had a good chin, but he was also resilient, and once he was put down, he could get back up.
Yeah, and I think also his trainer, Robert McCracken, deserves a lot of credit, who's been with him from the beginning, and they had a great relationship, and it really helped Froch.
What do you think was Froch's best moment? Maybe the Butte fight.
Yeah, that's interesting, because we had that question in Heroes and Villains this week. And we all gave a different answer, didn't we? Which speaks volumes about
his career. It. Yeah,
I think Butte's right up there because he absolutely annihilated him, didn't he? A lot of people thought Butte, myself included, would win.
Yeah, so I thought so because I thought maybe it was a mark of how good Andre Ward is. But I thought that was sort of, well, maybe, I don't know if I thought that was it. But then we hadn't seen that much of Butte, but we knew he was really good.
We knew he was a class act, southpaw.
Yeah.
Was a decent amateur as well, world-class amateur.
He could hit hard.
But Froch absolutely blasted him out the ring. It was as if Butte had no business being in there with him, and Froch just mugged him. And that was sensational. And it was in Nottingham, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So to do it in front of his hometown fans is just, you know, the pinnacle. But it got better, didn't it?
Yeah, because that was a few years ago, and he probably only, you know, in all those years, he probably only had one easy fight, which was the fight after Butte, whoever that was.
Yeah.
Whose name escapes me now.
Mac.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then second fight with Kessler, that was a war, and that took Froch to sort of a new level as well.
He'd gone to Denmark as part of the Super Six and lost to Kessler, who is a world-class warrior, you know, one of the best, and those two were so evenly matched. So for Froch to reverse that win, I personally feel was his finest moment, but, you know, it's arguable. You know, to beat Kessler is a great performance.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to be ringside for both his last two fights, the Groves in Manchester. I thought the first Groves fight was awesome. That's probably the most exciting fight I ever seen.
And Groves deserves credit for that as well. I mean, yeah. He's obviously got flattened in the second fight and what have you, and stopped in the first fight. But, you know, he was there to win, and he shocked a lot of people when he decked Froch, you know, including Froch, and Froch has admitted that.
If I hadn't been wedged into my seat so tightly, I would have jumped up in the air in surprise, because like it was really sort of, it was really like intense atmosphere, and they'd really packed the journos in to the press row, and you know, British boxing press, we're not necessarily the slimmest bunch, so it was all quite a tight squeeze. I thought Groves was just, yeah, obviously really good, obviously beaten together, but I just didn't think he was on Froch's level. And then Groves came out and put him down really heavily in the first round, and I couldn't believe it, and the crowd was going mental.
I mean, Groves is so full of confidence as well, and he was shouting about that before the fight, what he was going to do, it was going to be the right hand, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And nobody expected him to do that. And, you know, he shocked everyone by himself, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he was boxing really well, Groves, and he was giving Froch a nightmare. He was giving him fits. And then Froch got to him, and there was a controversial ending, and it all set up the rematch nicely.
I know, poor old Howard Foster made them both a lot of money.
Yeah.
With his, it, I suppose it was a controversial decision at the time, though I could see, you know, I'm a safety, my view is generally safety first, you know, so I wouldn't, I'm a bit reluctant to criticise Howard Foster, and he gets it bang on much more often than not.
Nobody wants to see a fight go on too long. I think everyone would admit that Groves was certainly in some form of trouble. Whether he could have rode that storm or not, you know, we'll never know. But, you know, they had the rematch, and Froch laid to rest all the doubts pretty sensationally.
Well, exactly. It meant there had to be a rematch. And the rematch was great. Like, the build-up to that fight last year was fantastic. And filling, I know, well, people have banged on. Carl Froch himself has talked about Wembley Stadium quite a lot, but it was really special getting that many people in the National Football Stadium.
Yeah, it was a great moment in British boxing. And for Froch to as a finish to his career, you couldn't want for more, could you? That was absolutely perfect. He spoke about boxing in Vegas and that, but I don't think that's harmed his, you know, his resume that he hasn't boxed in Vegas or headlined in Vegas. It's not the be-all and end-all. It would have been nice, I guess, for him personally, but to go out, as he's reminded us, in front of 80,000 people, it's pretty special.
Yeah. Was it, what I remember most about it wasn't just the knockout, but it was just the noise, like even for the undercard, and even when the stadium wasn't quite full, it was just like so loud in there, even though we were, you know, down sort of ringside, you're quite far away from the seats of the stand, but there was just this sort of rumble of noise.
Yeah.
It was getting louder and louder until the main event. And by the main event, I'm not sure who the crowd, by the end of it, once Froch had sort of, you know, finished it, made his point with that knockout, you know, everyone was cheering him, the crowd was on his side. But at the start, I wasn't sure who the crowd was sort of favouring. It's just like they were out for blood. I think they were booing both of them.
I think Groves is a popular guy, but sometimes he says a few things that rattle people, and you know, he doesn't ingrain himself to people, but it was mad because he came in on the London bus, didn't he? And it was all very spectacular in showbiz, and I don't think the fight itself lived up to that, but the ending certainly did.
Yeah, the fight, I think they were both a lot more wary of each other than they were first time around, so it was much more, it was really interesting, but not as sort of thrilling as the first one.
So what way to finish? I mean, a lot of people would have liked him to fight Golovkin, but I don't think he needed to, did he?
No. It was more like, if he chose to fight Golovkin, that would be an amazing statement.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of, would he even earn as much for fighting Golovkin
as
he did against Groves?
Not, would he, but...
And I know, you know, I know it's a sport, and in Carl Froch's career, it certainly had been about fighting the best, but... He's 38. Does he need to carry on?
At the end of the day, if the desire isn't there, or the drive, or an ambition to carry on, then he's doing the right thing about walking away, because it's a dangerous game.
Yeah.
But did you see that tweet? Froch tweeted just a few days before he retired, a picture of himself, you know, in tremendous shape. And he said, "Too big, too strong for GGG." It's kind of like a parting shot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which is quite funny.
But yeah, but throughout his whole career, he's been an extremely proud man, hasn't he? And I think maybe that's why George Groves wound him up so much, because he really hit that nerve.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think, you know, I'm sure Carl Froch just would be confident that he could beat Golovkin.
Yeah, he'd have to be, wouldn't he? I mean, he was proud, confident. Some people could interpret it as arrogant, I don't know, but you know, they were all the part of his makeup that made him the fighter he is or was.
Yeah, but I suppose to keep winning so consistently at that level, to keep fighting the guys he fought, you have to have that cast iron self-belief.
You've got to have 100% confidence in your ability, surely. And Robert McCracken would have instilled that and maintained that within him.
Yeah, well, exactly like you say, Rob McCracken probably deserves a lot of credit for Carl Froch's career. It's amazing to think that McCracken, as well as being Carl Froch's corners, like the performance director of the GB team, who have done really well, like at the last Olympics, did pretty well at the European Games recently. Like, how good a boxing coach, I mean, I suppose it's hard to tell, but how good would you say Rob McCracken is?
The proof is in, you know, the results of Froch. I mean, credit to both of them for staying together the whole course and being so successful.
Well, he seems a very level-headed coach, McCracken. I remember after Froch had won, he was holding all fireworks were going off, he was celebrating. McCracken was just sort of leaning on the corner post, looking fairly nonplussed.
But that's quite nice, isn't it? You kind of need somebody like that in those situations. You don't want everyone jumping around doing cartwheels and going bonkers, do you? You need somebody just to sort of say, right, just take it all in. McCracken knows his stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I suppose that fight and that punch, if that's the last punch he's ever thrown, that's not a bad way to go out.
It was one of the great knockouts, wasn't it, of recent times, certainly on that stage. You know, one punch ironed out poor Groves, you know. Yeah. Credit to Groves as well, he's come back and won, and, you know, he's on the verge of another world title shot, which we kind of think he'll win, but...
Could be tough. So he's expected to fight Badou Jack in August in Las Vegas. It hasn't been, I don't think it's been fully confirmed. Don't think it's been signed off, like, you know, I don't think the deal's finally been signed, but it's all shaping up to be August in Las Vegas.
It's good for Groves, but you wonder what that stoppage loss to Froch has taken out of him. Hopefully not too much, but we'll see. I mean, the Rabras fight, you know, he shed a bit of rust, didn't he?
Yeah.
Blew out a few cobwebs, but...
He didn't look great in the Rabras fight. Maybe we underestimated Rabras beforehand. Rabras made a sterner stuff than expected. And credit to Groves in that he actually came back quite quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, when...
In hindsight, it was a good fight for him at the time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Badou Jack isn't a mug. He's world champion. It just remains to be seen still if there's any long-lasting effects from that stunning knockout.
Yeah, but then at least, like, Badou Jack's been stopped a couple of times, hasn't he?
Yeah,
George Groves can really punch.
Yeah.
So we didn't want to... So you'd say... Yeah, see, even if Froch had taken just a final, easy retirement fight, I don't know, maybe people in chat... I would have quite liked to have seen him fight one more time, I must admit, but that's just because I've really enjoyed watching him fight.
I half expected him to maybe fight Bernard Hopkins or someone like that, a big name, sort of relatively low risk fight.
Kazagi Roy Jones type.
Yeah, I mean, Hopkins, he took a bit of a beating, didn't he, against Kovalev?
He took quite a bad beating against Kovalev.
He's still a huge name, and he doesn't throw a hell of a lot of punches, does he? And that fight could be a bit of a fiddly affair, but, you know, what, just get out now, Froch, why not?
Yeah. Well, one boxer who said he wants to retire and wants out, but is still on course, it looks like just to take a final easy fight, is Floyd Mayweather. So, I mean, he's obviously achieved all there is to achieve in the sport. Says it's all over after September 12th, and now it's looking like he's taking a very easy opponent. It's not confirmed, but it's looking like it's going to be Andre Berto versus Floyd Mayweather on September 12th in Las Vegas. How does this make you feel?
How does it sit with us? Firstly, is it going to be his last fight? We're not so sure, are we? There's a school of thought that thinks that he's certainly in cahoots with the Al Haymon lot, isn't he?
Yeah.
And whether this is his last fight in the Showtime contract, isn't it?
Yeah.
So. That's for sure. Andre Berto, and the fight might be on CBS. Is that right?
It might be. Yeah. I mean, that's not
a given.
I think that's a long way from being done, but that's a distinct possibility. So rather than being pay per view, it would be free to view.
So if it is Berto, then the likelihood is that it wouldn't be pay per view.
Presumably, that would be quite a hard sell.
Yeah.
I'd watch it.
I think most people would watch it. It's just not a great fight, is it? You know, what can you do? I mean, they obviously threw a hell of a lot of money at Pacquiao fight, and it generated a lot of money.
Yeah.
Wasn't the greatest fight. Berto. I don't quite know what else to say about
that. I'm trying to think, why would you choose Andre Berto? As in, you know, he's... Obviously, it's like, you know, Berto, I suppose he can punch a bit, but maybe 5 years ago, we all thought Andre Berto was going to be really good.
Yeah.
He has, you know, he's lost to people that Mayweather's beaten, he's, what does he, yeah, his footwork's not great, is it? Does he move his feet much?
He's kind of, there's hints of slickness with Berto, and he's relatively fast hands, got a bit of a punch. Yeah, it's a bit of a so what fight, isn't it? You know, but, you know, circumstances dictate, and maybe they couldn't deal with anyone else, and Berto was the guy who's available, and...
Has he just done it to annoy Amir Khan? Berto's got the same trainer in Virgil Hunter, so he's sort of Amir Khan's gym mate. And, you know, we thought Amir Khan, you know, like straight after the Manny Pacquiao fight, we thought Floyd Mayweather was probably going to fight Amir Khan next.
That would have been a huge fight, wouldn't it? But, you know, as we've kind of alluded to, if it isn't his actual last fight, if it is only his last fight with Showtime, then perhaps something could be done with Khan.
But surely... Surely Amir Khan's going to have to move on, because he spent a lot of years waiting for Floyd Mayweather. You know, he could have been fighting, wasn't like many years ago, wasn't he? Couldn't he have fought for the IBF title, but passed on that because he was holding out for Floyd? Yeah. This was way
back in the past. It was a dangerous game, isn't it?
Yeah. Surely he's got to move on. Like, where does Amir Khan go from here?
I don't know. I mean, Mayweather's gone into camp, hasn't he? Like you said, they haven't officially... announce the opponent, so feasibly anything could happen.
But with Mayweather going into camp, it's sort of a little bit unfair on his opponent if the opponent doesn't know. But we did an interview with Virgil Hunter that's up on our website, and Andre Berto has been in the gym for the last like 5 weeks. So Andre Berto is in camp as well. But Amir Khan is not in Hunter's gym. Amir Khan is over here.
Yeah, so it's not going to be Khan then.
That made me think it wouldn't be Khan. Unless it's just to disadvantage him.
I think the fight we'll want to see Khan take is Kell Brook. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Mayweather fight Kell Brook. I'm not interested in a Mayweather Pacquiao rematch. I don't know about you.
It probably wouldn't be any different, but I don't think Mayweather Pacquiao was the worst fight ever. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah. I'm just out of step with the modern world.
I didn't think it would be a great fight, and Mayweather isn't known for being in exciting fights. He's a boxer, isn't he? He negates his opponents, he shuts them down, he makes them fight at his pace, and it's not Gatti Ward, is it? But, you know, people who expected a sensational fight would have been disappointed.
But we've got a video interview with Amir Khan on our website, and he rules out fighting Kell Brook this year. He just says no.
Yeah, disappointing.
Which is disappointing, but hopefully we can still cross our fingers and hope for a big summer 2016 fight.
There are plenty of options for all of those guys. It's, you know, politics permitting, people like Thurman, who won on the weekend.
And called out Mayweather after beating Luis Collazo.
Bradley is still about, isn't he?
Yeah.
Doing the business. So there are fights, there are options for those four guys that we've mentioned.
Bradley's probably the best at welterweight outside. Well, would you reckon Bradley... I was about to say Bradley's probably the best at welterweight outside of Mayweather and Pacquiao.
Yeah.
Given the people he's beaten, yeah, I'd say that. Yeah. Maybe you reckon Kell Brook would beat him.
There's two or three who've certainly got claim to that title.
Yeah. Bradley Kell Brook would be a great fight.
Sensational, yeah.
You know, and that could be May's top rank deal with Matchroom.
Yeah.
Keith Thurman called out Floyd Mayweather, but Thurman Khan, pretty good fight.
Thurman Khan's a brilliant fight, yeah.
They're both sort of advised by Al Haymon, yeah. So presumably that could be made.
And that would be a huge fight. Thurman's an interesting guy. He's very confident. He can punch. He's very fit. You know, he's in good fights. He stopped Collazo, but I just can't help but think there's something missing there. I could be wrong, but he feels like he's still a prospect, although he's a champion. Do you know what I mean? But we'll see. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh on him.
No, I can see what you're saying there. Like, I probably back Khan and Kell Brook to beat him. I think they're both just more complete fighters.
The problem with Khan Thurman is that Thurman's greatest asset is his power, isn't it? And Khan's biggest weakness would be his punch resistance. So put those two together and you could be a recipe for disaster for Khan.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah, but it's bound to be exciting, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Khan's pretty much guaranteed excitement.
Yeah, and also, you know, and maybe Khan is more solid at welterweight. Maybe stepping up in weight will help him.
Yeah, he beat your hero, didn't he, recently?
Chris Algieri is not necessarily my hero, but Kell Brook, Chris Algieri has to happen.
Yeah. I mean, Algieri caused Khan one or two problems.
Look, Algieri went the distance with Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah. Yes, he was in his cage though, wasn't he?
Exactly. Once he's out of the cage, things will get real. Also, last weekend, Britain has a new world champion in the form of Terry Flanagan.
Manchester's Terry Flanagan made history, didn't he?
Yeah, but it was in a frustrating way for everyone, in that Jose Zepeda's shoulder dislocated.
Yeah.
So he had to stop, and it looked painful. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a conclusive win. But frankly, I know it only went off for two rounds, but I after the first round, I was saying Flanagan's going to win this. Yeah. I thought he was outboxing him. I thought Zepeda looked strong.
Should they box again?
Logically, they should. It was unfair. You know, I mean, it wasn't unfair that Terry won. I think he had to get the belt after that.
The opportunity to fight for the title again. And like you said, you were confident Flanagan was going to win, and I think Flanagan would probably like to box him again and beat him conclusively. I mean, British lightweights, there's a bit of a renaissance, isn't there? This weekend, hopefully that'll continue.
But I just think in the meantime, while Zepeda's healing, Flanagan, there are a lot of exciting fights out there to be made.
Yeah.
You know, lightweight. Yeah, and you mentioned the British lightweights. We've got Anthony Crawler fighting for the world title in Manchester.
Yeah.
Is he going to do it?
It's a big ask, I think, because Perez is good, isn't he? I think he went the distance with Gamboa. I think, was that his only loss?
We can check. We can get back to you on that.
So he's been in that real top class. I think if Crawler is going to win, then kind of likes of Perez is the boxer he's got to beat.
Perez has only lost once, but he is top quality.
Gamboa. It's tough, but in Manchester, in his hometown, you know.
Yeah, and obviously, well, probably it's been widely documented, but Crawler's coming back from this. Well, he interrupted his neighbour's house being burgled, and for his trouble, got hit over the head with a concrete block and broke his ankle. Yeah. So this is his first fight back. Can he be inspired and be better than ever?
It's a pretty sensational story, isn't it? Because not only career-threatening injuries, they were life-threatening injuries. And to come back as a professional athlete, to fight at the very top level, is a hell of a story and a hell of an achievement for him just to be here in this situation. It would be big news, wouldn't it, if he can do it? And I think a lot of people are rooting for him.
Yeah. And it would be great if he could win. That would surely make him a pretty big star, which British boxing needs. And plus, we've got all these great lightweights. They're sort of fantastic fights to be made.
Yeah, we want to see them get it on with each other, don't we?
Kevin Mitchell, Derry Matthews is an interim title, and I think Derry Matthews is in the position to fight the winner.
Kevin Mitchell kind of thinks he is going to fight the winner.
Yeah, well, he's in the same promotional state. Well, yeah, I suppose if Crawler wins, it's an easier fight to make with Kevin Mitchell.
So, in terms of British lightweights, things are looking good. Can he do it? I don't know. I think he might be able to eke out a decision, but we'll see.
So I think for British fans, it's going to be, you know, hearts wanting him to win, heads thinking it's going to be tough against Perez.
Crawler's a fit guy. He throws lots of punches, and they obviously feel he's ready. You know, certainly from what we talked about, the injury and the attack, and you know,
his career is a sort of tremendous turnaround under Joe Gallagher. He was sort of an underdog when he won the British title, and now he's sort of, well, world class.
Yeah. So good luck to him.
And also, there's other, well, big British fights, or really good British fights on that bill in Manchester. Chris Jenkins, Tyrone Nurse.
He's got the egg against the foot.
Sam Eggington, Glenn Foot. Now, Glenn Foot's at his best, he's had sort of problems, let's call them, outside the ring.
Extracurricular activities, but Glenn Foot on his day is a problem for pretty much anyone domestically, and he'll give you a rough night. Eggington's young, isn't he? He's only like 21 or something.
He's young, he's tough, he gets hit a little bit too much.
All the recipe for a great fight,
isn't it? Yeah, I mean, that could be the fight of the week.
The night fight of the year, okay. Fingers crossed for that one.
Scott Quigg, Kiko Martinez.
Yeah.
That's surely got to be a good fight.
Yeah, that's just a big subplot, isn't it, in the whole Frampton Quigg sort of soap opera. Frampton obviously did a number on Martinez. Scott Quigg will aim to do a number on Martinez and make a statement and force that fight.
So Frampton, well, he beat Martinez to win his world title. Yeah. And he sort of, you know, he did it going backwards a lot off the back foot. Martinez.
Martinez is an aggressive, tough little Spaniard, isn't he?
Yeah. But it's really tough, really relentless.
Scott Quigg will meet him head on, surely, and that'll be an exciting fight.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. So I think I have a feeling Quigg's going to try and beat him at his own game.
Yeah, and if he does, I think everyone's a winner then, aren't they? Because we'll see a great fight. I expect Quigg to win. It won't be easy, but he should look good doing it.
How dangerous do you think it'll be for Quigg? Because I think if he's careless,
he'll lose.
Yeah, it could hurt him.
It's got to be educated aggression, isn't it? And I think if he can stop Martinez in his tracks, that'll be what they'll aim to do.
Yeah.
But it's easier said than done.
Yeah. And, yeah, well, Carl Frampton and Scott Quigg aren't meeting each other in the ring, but they are going head-to-head on TV.
Yeah.
So that Matchroom show is on Sky with Quigg and Crawler and all that crowd. Frampton is fighting over in Texas in El Paso against Alejandro Gonzalez Jr., but that's going to be on ITV.
Yeah. I think that caught us all a bit off guard when Frampton signed with Al Haymon, which he did, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
So his career's sort of taken a big left turn, isn't it, stateside, and he'll look to impress there because it's crucial for his sort of future that he is exciting over there. I don't know a lot about Gonzalez Jr.
Not a vast amount, but, you know, Team Frampton aren't expecting it to be easy, though. I think we're all expecting it to be easy.
Right.
But the interesting thing about this fight is, you know, how good he looks, and, you know, everyone loves a knockout. So if he can get a highlight reel finish, then we've actually got a really interesting interview with Barry McGuigan in this week's issue of Boxing News magazine, where he talks about the plan for Carl Frampton and how they, you know, why they're going over to America, and basically he's on course for the winner of Leo Santa Cruz, Abner Mares, who are fighting in August.
Sensational fight.
Yeah, that'll be huge.
Frampton is an exciting guy, isn't he? He's a really good fighter, but crucially, he's fan-friendly, TV-friendly as well. And the winner of Santa Cruz Mares, which is another great fight, would be a really good opponent for him.
Yeah. So there's a lot of boxing to watch this weekend. We're going to put a TV guide up on our website, because basically we've got...
Oh, it's a boxing fan's dream, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we've got Friday night, David Price boxing for the European title against Erkan Tepper in Germany.
Tonight.
That's tonight. And then Saturday, Nanita Donaire plus
in Macau,
Ik Yang is fighting for a world title.
Freddie Roach's guy, isn't he?
Yeah, so that will be on Box Nation during the day. Then at night, you've got the Sky Show in Manchester and Carl Frampton on ITV. So there's an awful lot. Boxing to
on
watch.
The Sky Show, you've got Tyrone Nurse, Chris Jenkins as well.
Yeah.
That should be a good fight. Another all-British, well-matched fight. So,
yeah.
There's a lot of good action this weekend.
Yeah, but the first man coming up is David Price. This could be winning the European heavyweight title. That could be huge for him. His sort of comeback from the defeats to Tony Thompson over the last couple of years have been pretty low-key overseas. Hasn't really fought anyone, you know, anyone more than a journeyman, and hasn't looked spectacular either, not as spectacular as he did coming up as a prospect. But this is a serious fight, isn't it, Tepper?
Yeah, he kind of needs it now, doesn't he? He needs a decent test to see where he's at. I think he's had one or two injury problems, hasn't he? Or
yeah, there was a hand thing. Yeah. And then he could have been fighting in Liverpool, but hurt his neck, but now has a European title fight, so...
Yeah, he was a huge prospect. He's still kind of a prospect, isn't he? But he's kind of tripped up a couple of times. Yeah, he needs this fight now. There's no point, you know, feeding him, you know, bums, so to speak. He needs his test, and I think we think he'll win, but it won't be easy. And it'll propel him right back in the picture.
Yeah, I mean... Win this, he's a European champion, and what, maybe a couple of fights away from a world title fight?
Oh, yeah. Wilder could be fighting Povetkin, maybe.
Like, I wonder if that's some way off, because Povetkin is his mandatory now, but I'm not sure when he has to meet his mandatory. And Wilder's next expected to fight on September the 26th, but I don't think it's expected to be against, he's certainly not expected to be against Povetkin. I don't know, you know, it might be. I don't know who it would be against.
No.
But I'm expecting it to be someone who, against whom Wilder will be a huge favourite.
Yeah, I mean, someone decent for price might be some, you know, an American name. I mean, assuming he beats Tepper tonight, which won't be easy. But maybe like an Areola or someone like that could be a good name for him to beat, you know, and get him known.
Yeah.
Get his name out there against the Americans.
But yeah, well, Chris Areola's fighting this weekend as well, and that he'll be on ITV4 actually before the Carl Frampton show on ITV1. But you know, we got an interview with Areola on the Boxing News website, and he's talking about trying to, you know, getting the Wilder fight, and he might be, you know, I mean, that fight would make sense for Wilder if they can sell it over there.
Yeah.
You know, Wilder just fought Eric Molina, so Areola's going to be better than that.
Yeah, well, Areola lost to Stiverne, who lost to Wilder, didn't he? Well, Stiverne's a name who's not really getting talked about, is he? So.
Yeah, I'm not sure the world's desperate to see Wilder Stiverne again. But yeah, I think, David Price might not be that far away from Wilder. He might not, if he wins, he might not be a million miles away from the winner of Klitschko Fury.
No, I don't think he's far away from Wilder as it is. I think if he beats Tepper, certainly not. Loses to Tepper, he's got to rethink seriously, isn't he? But Wilder, you know, he showed against Molina that he isn't the second coming. So, you know, we'll see.
Would you fancy David Price's chances against Deontay Wilder?
I think ask again after tonight and then we'll have a clearer view.
All right, fair enough.
What do you think?
You know, I think he's dangerous for anyone because he's got a great punch on him.
I think Tony Thompson is underrated, and at that time when he beat Price, he'd give most of the heavyweights a decent fight and would beat a lot of good heavyweights. So they weren't disgraceful losses, really, were they?
No. But yeah, maybe those losses have affected his confidence.
Yeah, well, they can't not have, can they?
Yeah, so he's got to get that back, but winning the European title would certainly help. I think there was...
It's good that he's kind of gone in that direction of... In the European direction and sort of couldn't gather his thoughts over there. And
yeah, and it'd be great to see him come back to England as...
European champion.
Yeah, exactly, and...
He's a proud guy, isn't he?
Yeah. And even if those world title fights are some way away for him, they're big British fights, and that, you know, anti-Joshua David Price for a title is big.
Huge.
Tyson Fury, we wanted to see Price Tyson Fury a long time ago.
They fought as amateurs, didn't they?
Yeah, that would still be good.
Price Joshua for the European title, that sells pretty well, doesn't it?
Yeah, that would be great. But Joshua's just got, they confirmed this week that he's fighting Gary Cornish for the Commonwealth title.
Yeah.
How long is that fight going to last?
I don't know. I don't want to do Cornish a disservice, but Joshua's a hot prospect, isn't he? So it'd take a really good fighter to take him into some rounds, so we'll see.
Yeah, well, I asked that because the last time I saw Gary Cornish fight, it was a while ago now, so things may have changed and Cornish didn't have much amateur experience, but, you know, his defence was pretty open.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be... That'll be a problem with somebody who hits as hard as Joshua does, but, you know, for the Commonwealth title, it's a good fight, or it makes sense, and I think Joshua's got the Dillian White fight looming for the British title.
Yeah, that's the fight a lot of people want to see. I mean, few people would expect Cornish to beat Joshua. So, yeah, all eyes will be on the White fight.
All right.
All right.
Anything else going on?
I'm not quite sure, mate. I think we've covered a lot of it.
Well, big weekend for boxing. And if you need to know more, Boxing News is actually a magazine that you can buy in shops and read about stuff, including the previews for this week for the fights this week. Plus, we've got the David Price preview online on our website. That's www.boxingnewsonline.net. Plenty of other stuff on there, including video interviews with Paulie Malignaggi talking about life with Al Haymon. Amir Khan's on there. Virgil Hunter talking about Berto. We've got interviews with Carl Frampton. We've got more stuff from McGuigan's. We've got Barry McGuigan in the magazine. We'll have Shane McGuigan on the website. Anthony Ogogo's back in action. He'll be up on the website. Plenty to digest. But in the meantime, thanks very much for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you.